Great. Well, I'm thankful that public health says I'm allowed to preach without a mask. So if any of you want to take a mask off, it's your turn to preach next week. So. All right. As I say, we are coming into a Christmas season like few of us have ever experienced. And our popular image of Christmas and the season that precedes it is often one of shining and merry and bright and beautiful lights and colors, warm feelings and a spirit of happiness and peace and joy. And what I've been hearing a lot, both publicly and sort of social media and in conversations I have with many of you and others, is that it's going to be hard to feel like it's Christmas this year. Have you felt like that? And I think as we have that experience, that's one that's shared all around us, that it's just a very different feeling year. But that's very much in line with what Christmas is. And it begins, the story begins in this place of darkness, of lament and longing. And we can't properly understand what Christmas means and is about apart from seeing and experiencing that darkness. And so, I believe that this is a year like no other where we can truly experience what Christmas is. How we can truly sense the greatness of Jesus coming. Advent is a season of longing, anticipation, waiting, expectation. And that is what Jesus comes into in his day. These are real people. Isaiah was a real person, historical fact, who struggled and waited, looking for a rescuer, a savior, one who could help them out of the dark times they were experiencing. And so as we lead into Christmas this year, as we begin this Advent season that anticipates it, we are going to begin in that dark place, seeing and sensing what the first people to encounter Jesus saw, knew, and experienced. So the first act, and we have five leading through this series called Still, the first act is the prophets. And as we look at the prophets, these are people who wrote anticipating a rescuer for the people of God hundreds of years, often, before he ever came. Real people. The prophets' jobs were, throughout the Old Testament, was to tell people that God was in a relationship with them. We call that a covenant. And to call them back to faithfulness to God and that covenant. To relate to God in a way that is right and true and just, because people kept messing that up. And so the prophets would call them back to that and warn them that if they didn't do that, they were going to suffer the consequences of separation from God and his purposes for them. They would struggle. They would experience pain. In fact, they would be just in tremendous agony as a people. And on occasion, the prophets also spoke about things that might happen in the future. Most of what they said was about their present circumstances and warning them not to keep going down the path they were, but to remain in faithfulness to God, to turn back to him when they have turned away. But occasionally, they made comments that were very much future-oriented. We sometimes think of the word prophet as being someone who tells the future, but in the reality of that day, the prophets were people who saw where they were in the moment and spoke to that moment. And only occasionally foretold future events. Let me take you here. I think it's the timeline that's next. I am not historically minded. And I'm not going to spend a tremendous amount of time going through the history of Israel. But I want to give you some sense of the days that they lived in leading up to the coming of Jesus. This is the era before Christ, about the millennia before, the 1,000 years before his coming. It begins way over here on the left, and my apologies to those on the podcast who can't see the graphic, but it's a timeline. It begins with the people of God united together, but then dividing into two factions, to two nations. It was a divided kingdom, Israel and Judah. Israel in the north, Judah in the south. And through this time of division, they suffered and struggled, and some of the prophets, you can see on the top half, the names of the prophets and about when they would have spoken to the people of Israel, warning them, calling them back to faithfulness in God. And we see as it goes on, we get to this point here, about 722. And you see that the Israel line stops and there's arrows going off. Well, what happens there is the Assyrians, another nation comes and begins to destroy those people. And this is said in the biblical narrative that God has been warning them about this, that if they don't turn back to Him, if they aren't faithful to Him, He's going to send other people to oppress them and to conquer them because He won't protect them anymore, and that'll be a result of their sin. And so the people of the northern tribes, 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel, they're destroyed. And they're taken out of their land, and they're removed from their place, their home. And they're broken. This brokenness continues, and it evolves later into the Babylonians who conquered the Assyrians. And the Babylonians would come and attack, and they would, on several different occasions, in fact, there were three different times where they deported more of the people from Israel. This is particularly the tribe of Judah, we call it, the nation of Judah now. And you see there's two lines of red that indicates the early two deportations, but then there's what we call the exile, where the people of God are removed from their land, the promised land that God had led them to, that God had given them as their home. They are removed from that place. And they are taken into exile. And to add shame upon this, the temple, the beautiful temple that they had built as a place to worship God, to experience God's presence, is destroyed. Not only is their nation removed from their home, removed from the comforts of life, plundered and robbed and destroyed, but also the sign of God's presence amongst them, the temple, is destroyed. What abject humiliation and shame that is brought upon them as a nation. The Babylonians, in turn, later are conquered by the Persians. And under the Persians, there is some relief as they are allowed to return back to their homeland, if they would so like. And they're able to rebuild the temple. It's a shadow of what the first glorious one was. But there's some small comfort in that. They're able to return, but it's still not life as usual. Well, later, we come to another empire, the Macedonians, or we might call it the Hellenistic peoples, the Greek peoples. This is Alexander the Great. In fact, the second temple was almost destroyed then by Alexander the Great because the people of God wouldn't call him a god. They wouldn't deify Alexander, which was a big part of sort of the Greek culture, is you gotta treat the king, the emperor like he's God. And they wouldn't do that. And so he was about to destroy the temple yet again. But through flattery and diplomacy, they were able to stave that off. Nevertheless, as the Hellenistic period went on, their temple was treated with shame and dishonor as sacrifices of pigs were made in the temple and idols were brought into the temple. And so the people of God were ashamed and they're, again, just struggling in this place of discomfort and everything is not the way it's supposed to be. Later, closer to the time of Jesus, the Roman Empire came. And through the Hellenistic period, they were forced to become like the Greeks, to lose their culture. In fact, they weren't allowed to practice Sabbath. They weren't allowed to do circumcision, the signs of their faithful covenant. And so the basic things of their religious experience were lost. And then the Romans came, and furthermore, and on it goes. See, for this 1,000 years, the people of God lived under this weight of struggle and pain and brokenness. There was political instability, economic uncertainty, religious upheaval, There was military violence. And there was social disruption of every kind. The people were broken, their spirits were crushed. They had turned away from God and been unfaithful, and through brief moments of returning back to Him had seen some sense of light. But through that all, there was just difficulty and pain and struggle. And we think 2020 has been bad. This was a bad 1,000 years. This was the people of God in pain and struggle. And there's the two themes that I would call out from this story, this timeline that's on display, is the themes of exile and oppression. Exile is the removal from their home, the homelessness that they felt even when they got back to their place, their nation. They still didn't feel like they were at home because they weren't in control. It wasn't the same. It had been destroyed. It had been burned to the ground in some cases. So even when they were in their home nation, it didn't feel like home. And they were oppressed. Other nations were in control. And they were unfair and they were unjust and they demanded taxes and they demanded tribute. They asked them to treat them like gods. You can imagine how that might have felt. And I think in our day today, in what 2020 has been for us as an experience, we can relate to some of those feelings that they must have had. We perhaps feel like we have been in exile, even if we live in our same home. There's a sense that it doesn't quite feel like home. Maybe it's because we can't go to Nova Scotia or New Brunswick or Newfoundland or somewhere else in the country or beyond, and we can't connect with our family because of all the restrictions that have been put in place. And there's a sense that home isn't what home is meant to be. Or maybe we feel oppressed by all these restrictions and just the struggle of COVID-19, the uncertainty of it, the unrest that we've seen socially south of the border and even here in our country based on race and social issues and issues with women and all kinds of things that we've been experiencing in this crazy, as we say, unprecedented year. Perhaps we can begin to imagine that same darkness and weight that they felt in those days. And so perhaps we can also hear the promises of the prophets in this moment. Perhaps this year we can hear the promises of the prophets, the words leading into the Christmas story. Perhaps we can hear them with a new clarity because we likewise are experiencing collectively a darkness together as a people. And so now let's turn to those words of the prophets, just a few of them, that anticipated the Messiah coming, anticipated the coming of Jesus. And as we do that, let me take you to these words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer that we read earlier. The celebration of Advent is possible only to those who are troubled in soul, who know themselves to be poor and imperfect, and who look forward to something greater to come. Advent is looking forward to something greater to come. Do you want something greater to come? Yeah. Yeah. Let's hear the words of the prophets. Isaiah 9, 2, 6, and 7. The people who walk in darkness. We are a people who walk in darkness. The people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine, for a child is born to us. A son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. Do you hear those words now as a sign of hope in the darkness? Do you hear now how Isaiah is anticipating a day when one will come who will rule with unity, like David, before the divided kingdom, who will rule with purity of heart, like David did at his best moments, who will rule in a way that brings peace, not struggle and oppression, who will rule in a way that establishes an eternal place of stability and refuge, where we are counseled rather than destroyed. Can you hear how that would sound like hope to the people of God? Is that hope for you today? And I'm sure when the people heard these words from Isaiah, their response was, come now. Where is that Messiah? Come now. We're told that it will be a little child. And then, let me take you to these words. These are words actually spoken to David. Not as a prophecy, but these are the words of God himself. And I want to focus on these simply because they bring greater clarity to these prophecies. 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 12 and 13. For when you die, David, and are buried with your ancestors, I will raise up one of your descendants, your own offspring, and I will make his kingdom strong. He is the one who will build a house, a temple, for my name, and I will secure his royal throne forever. Let me give you just a word of explanation here. David didn't build the temple, but his son Solomon did. But God is not talking about Solomon. God is talking about a temple that David can't quite even imagine yet. God is promising to do something that David can't even comprehend. He can imagine a temple, but he doesn't know the temple that God is talking about. And that one who comes, that Messiah, is the one who will build a house, a temple, for my name. See, God is promising that they will have a home always. That God's presence will be amongst his people always. The temple is a sign of home. The temple is a sign of God living with his people always. And that's the promise that they clung to. And so I'm sure the people would say, come now, send that Messiah now. On we go to the next. This is Ezekiel. After the temple has been destroyed, the first temple. This is after David, hundreds of years after David. But what does he say in this prophecy? He says, my servant David will be their king. They will have only one shepherd. David is long gone. He's not talking about David. He's talking about the offspring of David like it was promised in the previous verse. And this is the Lord speaking through Ezekiel. They will obey my regulations and be careful to keep my decrees because of that one shepherd. And I will make a covenant of peace with them, an everlasting covenant. I will give them their land and increase their numbers, and I will put my temple among them forever. I will make my home among them. I will be their God, and they will be my people. You see here, God is promising them. They are seeing a temple that has been destroyed. And God is now promising them that one, the offspring of David, will come and bring peace. That the political and military instability that they are experiencing and seeing all around them, nation upon nation, destroying them, reigning over them, oppressing them, that there will come one who will be raised up to bring peace once and for all. Can you hear how that would sound to their ears? I will make a covenant of peace with them, an everlasting covenant. And that sense of exile and homelessness that they felt, I will give them their land and increase their numbers, and I will put my temple among them forever. See, God is saying, I'm going to make a home among you forever. You'll have your land back. You'll have your home. That sounds beautiful. That sounds wonderful. Can you imagine what it would be like if a foreign government came here and took you to Quebec and you were not allowed to come back? You weren't allowed to see your family? You were separated from your home, your people, your history? Can you imagine how it would sound to you if God said those words, I'm going to give you your home and PEI back? How it would sound to you to be told that there will become a government that won't end, that will bring peace always? That won't oppress you, that won't take advantage of you, that won't rob you and destroy and plunder all that you've worked for. Can you imagine now how that would hear to your ears? I will put my temple among them forever. I will make my home among them. See, they are experiencing homeless, and yet God is promising to make a home among them. I will be their God, and they will be my people. This is incredible. Imagine how this would sound to them. On to the next, and I think this might be our last. This is Malachi. Malachi was the last of the prophets to speak, and following him, there was about 400, 450 years of silence where no major prophets came along to speak to the people of God, and they felt the silence from God. But this is what Malachi says. Look, I'm sending my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. You might recognize those words. He's talking about John the Baptist. Then the Lord you are seeking will suddenly come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant whom you look for so eagerly is surely coming, says the Lord of heaven's armies. The last thing that they hear is that there's going to be a messenger who comes, who prepares the way for God to come and make his home as a temple. And they look for that. They wait for that. They want that stability, that peace, that promise. And they say, come now. How would it feel for you to hear God say to you that he wants to be present with you always? That he will never leave you or forsake you? How would it feel to know that you don't have to be afraid and uncertain any longer? They heard these promises with longing, in brokenness, wanting to see that Messiah come. How beautiful. What are the themes of these promises? Well, if I could say them as two words, here's what they would be. That rather than experiencing exile and homelessness, they would experience the dwelling presence of God. And rather than experiencing oppression, they would experience the God reigning in peace for their good, for their flourishing. Those are things I think that even today we say, come now, too. So we watch, we wait, we long for this. And as the years go by in their silence with no more prophets speaking for hundreds of years, you think about how far back is 450 years from now? How far back does 450 years go? Do the math. 1550. I'm trying to do it on the spot. Just nod, so yeah, that's close enough. 1570. Oh my goodness, it's 2020. I'm subtracting from 2000. Does anybody else have that where you still feel like the 90s was like 10 years ago? Ah, I'm getting older. 1570. You think about how far back that is. Like Canada didn't even exist, right? Think how far back that is, feeling that God has abandoned you, feeling that God is silent. And some of you in your own life, it feels like it's been 450 years since you've felt God's presence. And there's this longing and this waiting. And then that child that Isaiah spoke about, he comes. The Prince of Peace. Rather than coming in power like we want to see, like we're expecting, to dominate the nations around, he comes in vulnerability and humility with a greater power than we could imagine, and yet not in the way we anticipated. And that baby, that vulnerable human being that enters into and experiences our pain and suffering, that baby comes to the temple of God on his eighth day, where he's dedicated by his parents. And there's two people that have been watching and waiting all these many years. Two older people who struggled through the darkness, the quietness, the silence of God, and anticipated that God would still act again, anew. And as we look into Luke chapter 2, we see their stories. The first is a man named Simeon. At that time, there was a man in Jerusalem named Simeon. He was righteous and devout and was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come and rescue Israel. Remember, they're now under Roman oppression. "I've seen your salvation, which you've prepared for all people," he says when he sees this child. This child. He sees this baby and sees that this is that Messiah he's been waiting for. "I have seen your salvation," he says, "which you have prepared for all people. He's a light to reveal God to the nations, and he is the glory of your people Israel." No longer is it the words, "come now." It's the words, "here now." He is present. And then we see a woman. We're told that she lost her husband after only 7 years of marriage, and she's now 84 years old. And all the rest of this time, she has been watching and waiting. She's probably been waiting decades as a poor woman with no one to provide for her. In fact, she lives in the temple, it says. And that's what the next couple of verses say. Anna, a prophet, notice that it's a woman, and notice that she's a prophet, was also there in the temple. She never left the temple, but stayed there day and night, worshiping God with fasting and prayer. You see, the temple had become her home, even if she felt that God was no longer there. She never left the temple, but stayed there day and night, worshiping God with fasting and prayer. She came along just as Simeon was talking with Mary and Joseph, and she began praising God. She talked about the child to everyone who had been waiting expectantly for God to rescue Jerusalem. Here is an old man and an old woman, long in tooth, long waiting, long suffering, who are able to see in the humble humiliation of this moment, this little child vulnerable, that this is what they've been waiting for. What vision does it take to be able to recognize that in this baby, in this child, when it looks so different from what they would probably have hoped for and imagined? And yet they see here in this baby the realization of the hopes of 1,000 years and more. Because they are looking for God in the midst of the darkness so attentively that the smallest spark is enough light for the room. Friends, Jesus has come to his temple. But far greater than that one place, bound in time and physical location, Jesus is the temple. He transcends a place so that we might know the presence of God wherever we are. That we might have God at home amongst us wherever we are. Though we might feel as though we are homeless and in exile now, God is at home amongst us today. He is with us, here now. And though we may feel oppressed and struggling under the weight of life and the tensions of the world we find ourselves in 2020, he is and remains the Prince of Peace. And his rule and reign will never end. And he is establishing his kingdom amongst us even now that will allow us to experience heaven on earth. Jesus has come. The Messiah is here now. And the home, the hope, the life that you are longing for is found in him. It is a temple that cannot be destroyed. He will live within you if you allow him. It is a hope that cannot be removed from you, cannot be plundered and taken away. His reign is greater than even the power of death itself. And we will hear that story through the life of Jesus, through his death and his resurrection ultimately. But here in this moment, Anna and Simeon have found what they have been looking for. And I tell you, friends, the hope you've been looking for in 2020 is here amongst us now. His name is Jesus. And there is nothing about his promises that can be removed from you. So,